This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio this morning is, of course, Philip C. Let's talk about markets, because it was kind of a mixed day, wasn't
it? That's right. I think following the OPEC's announcement, I think oil prices basically shot up. And you can see that in the numbers, the Dow was up 0.8%, the S&P 500 up 0.2%, but the Nasdaq was down 0.1%. If you cross over to the Pacific Asia, relatively mixed day. The Nikkei was up 0.2%, Hang Seng was down 1.5%, Shanghai was up 0.3%, and closer down South Southeast Asia, Singapore down 0.8%, and FBM KLCI was down 0.4%.
So for some analysis on what's moving markets, we speak to Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Good morning, Joe. Now, US markets, well, a bit of a mixed day, but generally still quite good, breaking a five-day losing streak, except for the Nasdaq. But is this just a dead cat bounce?
No, I don't think so. Remember, the S&P 500 is up around 20% year-to-date total return. So, and September is always kind of a volatile, choppy, downward month for equities. So I'm not really worried about it. We're still bullish on equities. And, you know, we had a little bit of a rally today. That's good. I think Wall Street's talking themselves right into a correction, right? We've been in a correction 5% or more since late October. So it's almost like we're lying on the couch looking for one or waiting for one. But not yet. It's going to come, but it's going to be a buying opportunity.
Well, staying in the U.S., the CPI figures did come out tonight, right on the heels of higher-than-expected producer prices last Friday. Is inflation starting to shape up as a threat to economic recovery?
It's inflation is shaping up to be more of a volatile element, because surely some of the stuff isn't transitory. Supply chain issues continue to be a big issue amongst automakers, iPhone makers, and the biggest issue is wages. Wages are rising. There are no workers, and even when you give them a pay raise, they don't want to work. So you got to even raise the wages even higher. That's not transitory. So we're seeing for sure wages build in. The question is, how much can these companies offset that? Companies are paying more for inputs and labor, but so far, many of them have been able to pass down those costs. But that's going to get tougher month to month.
So, Joe, you're basically saying that there is inflation, but then will this move the Fed to actually raise rates faster? Because they have two objectives, right? One is inflation, the other one is jobs.
If we get a hot reading tomorrow, then we put the tapering debate back, we bring that forward. So maybe the Fed starts to taper October, November instead of December. I think it's semantics, because we are going to have to taper, right? The bond purchasing, that's not necessarily necessary at this point. But what people worry about tapering is tightening. Well, it's one step closer to tightening, but it's not tightening. There's loads of liquidity working through the capital markets here in the United States. So if the tapering debate has moved up, we might see a wiggle down, some volatility. But here again, to me, it's a buying opportunity. But inflation for sure is stickier than what we thought, say, 4 or 5 months ago.
And Joe, your perspective on commodities. I mean, there's this story about uranium stocks going nuclear. But in contrast, right, commodities like oil and aluminium are seeing a spike in demand in their prices. Do you have a bullish view of resource commodities, or has this super cycle reached its peak?
No, actually, I think we're still in the midst of the super cycle, particularly when you look at the push for the green revolution, right? Renewable energies, whether it's solar, wind, offshore turbines, they all require lots of minerals, lots of mining, lots of energy intensive. So, we've seen a backup in oil prices here related to some gas shortages in Europe, oil hurricane problems down in the Gulf of Mexico. But to us, we're still bullish on commodities, because if we're serious about climate change, if we're serious about renewables and being less fossil fuel driven, then this super commodity cycle has a long way to go. But think lithium, cobalt, silver, aluminum, and really across the board.
All right, let's shift to this world's second largest economy, China. Now, data is pointing to a slowing economy there, especially the domestic consumption. Should we be worried?
We are concerned. I mean, that China, the Chinese middle class is a huge consumer. A lot of demand for whether it's sneaks, iPhones, hamburgers, coffee, you name it, air travel. So we're watching that very carefully. We've got Singles Day. That's not for like another month, November 11th. We'll see how that pans out. But no doubt China is a weak link here near term. But I think China will do whatever it takes, to borrow Draghi's term from Europe, does whatever it takes to keep that economy growing by 5-6%.
And you're seeing some sense of thawing of relationship in this Cold War between the US and China, right? As President Xi had a call with President Biden. But they are weighing in an investigation into Chinese subsidies, right? But do you see this as a start of a better relationship going forward?
I mean, I think that would be too optimistic if I said that. I mean, I'd be happy with the status quo. Because believe it or not, when Biden, the first couple of months of the Biden administration, U.S.-China relations actually deteriorated from the Trump days. And a lot of volatility there. Now, I think they're kind of leveling off, so to speak. So I hope, you know, it never hurts to talk. I'd like to see the United States and China work, you know, agree to disagree, but keep the trade lines open, the capital flows. I mean, Wall Street is going big into China now to help mobilize that savings and investments in China. So, you know, when one door shuts, I think another one's going to open. So it's going to be a seesaw battle in terms of how this all plays out.
Meanwhile, the Financial Times is reporting that China will break up Ant's group Alipay and create a separate app for its loan business. Now, does such maneuvers make you nervous about investing in China big tech?
It's certainly, well, I mean, if you're worried about it, it's too late because we've seen, you know, billions, if not trillions of dollars of market cap wiped out on the China big tech. Well, we're seeing a lot of people who like tech in Asia come to the United States. That's giving, you know, if they want to be in the technology sector, they've shifted out of China into the U.S. We're watching it very carefully, for sure. But we think China is investable. There's opportunities there, whether it's healthcare, robotics, artificial intelligence, logistics, and basically where, you know, the government is trying to redirect wealth. Consumption is another one. So it's definitely more volatile. It's definitely a lot harder, unpredictable. So we still have a lot of clients in the United States that want to be participants in the Chinese market.
And just bringing it home, closer to home, you know, countries in Southeast Asia, like ourselves in Malaysia, we are beginning to reopen in spite of the pandemic. Do you think our recovery in this region will hinge more on China or the U.S.'s economic performance for the rest of the year?
I think it depends on you folks in Malaysia. I mean, you've got about, 54% of your population totally vaccinated. So I really think your fate, economic fate, is in your own hands when it comes to getting the vaccination out. Getting it into the, you know, the arms of the workers, keep the ports open, keep the plants open. We need your chips, of course. So I think a big issue there, country by country, is going to be how effective are you getting the jabs, getting the vaccination. Then all else will follow. Because if the United States and China can kind of declare a truce, not make things worse, U.S. economy, a little pause here, Q3. We're both going to be reflating into 22. That's good for Southeast Asia. But here now, it's important for everyone out where you are to get vaccinated, get to work, get the supply chains up and running, and then we're all going to be better off heading into 22.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, reminding us that our economic fate is in our hands. So get vaccinated, get those jobs going. Make sure that the supply chains don't get disrupted.
Jang, jang, jang.
Yeah. You can't blame anyone but yourself,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. But it's very interesting because if you look at our trade statistics, I think China is about 14, 15% of our total exports, whereas U.S. is about 10%, you know? So very interesting to see the decoupling or the linkages going forward.
I think COVID-19 has reminded us there's no delinking. Everything is interrelated,
absolutely,
correlated. So it's very hard to say, oh, you know, you only need to worry about one part of the world. No, everybody's in it for the long haul.
Yeah.
But it is true. Our economic fate is very much in our hands. And we did see when we did have lockdowns, the repercussions were global. I mean, to the point where car companies like Toyota couldn't get their cars out of the factory because of a small part of a chip that Malaysia produces.
That's right. I mean, I think there's also the question about not only the interlinkage between US and China, but the fate of the relationship between US and China. Whether it's even a positive or negative repercussion is also a question to ask.
Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.